There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
You're listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast, a Texas Tech athletics podcast where food and sports clash at the goal line. Here are your hosts, Spencer and Michael.
All right, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the 23 Personnel Podcast. This is your host, Spencer, joined by Michael. Michael, what's up, man?
Got about 1.5 inches of rain. How are you doing?
That's it? It feels like it rained a whole lot more than that.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I was a little disappointed. I thought we would at least get to two, considering how slow and steady it rained all day. But hey, beggars can't be choosers, man.
No. It was good. My Habitat for Humanity hours got rained out, though. We were at the home site, and it was raining all morning. We got there like 8 o'clock, and I was working almost 2 full hours. Like, we're going to call it. Because it just kept getting, like, it didn't slow down, and the wind picked up, and it was blowing in. Like, so they had walls and the roof on. It was dried in. But when the wind kicked up, it was like blowing water and rain into the house. It's like, well, we're just going to call it. And it was like 45 degrees.
Yeah. We got the kind of weird hail / sleet kind of thing going on.
It hit
at my
most
office
of the day, like off and on.
Yeah. I don't even know if it was technically, anyway, weather talk, no surprise to everybody. That's usually what we launch into if something's been a little bit different.
That's how we roll.
I'm getting older. We're dads. This is how this works.
Yeah. Yeah, we got lots to talk about tonight. Not weather related at all. Well, some weather related because there was a baseball game that was supposed to be played that has been delayed for weather.
I predicted this yesterday. I'm getting it out there. I'm just that good.
Whatever weather service Tim Tadlock uses, I think you've caught on to it.
Perhaps. He texts me. That's what it is.
And I still can't figure it out either. Because like when it came through, it's like, hey, when you said the game maybe delays, what are you talking about? And it's like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It rained. Whatever it is, it's not Apple. Because like they'll make an adjustment to the schedule. And I'm like, there's nothing happening on my phone. Like there's nothing. And then like 10 minutes before scheduled first pitch, downpour, thunderstorm. It's like, where were you on that one, Apple? But Tim Tadlock was all over it.
Oh yeah, he's a fellow weather observer like the two of us.
He has a keen eye on the horizon there. Keen eye on the horizon. Texas Tech baseball has a game tomorrow. Abilene Christian, or is it ACU? Who knows? Are they one of the schools that's like, don't call us Christian?
They might be. All I see is ACU now.
Yeah. So ACU, the Wildcats, have them Wednesday, 3-game series on the road in Fort Worth against TCU, not Texas Christian, but TCU. And then 2 games in Fayetteville, at least they're all scheduled this way, 2 games against #1 Arkansas. So RPI going on up.
Yeah. Brutal stretch.
Coming off a 6-game win streak though, Michael, we couldn't really be in a better spot to hit the road. Got some momentum, including a conference sweep against the Houston Cougars. Basketball.
Yeah, Tech is only the third team in the Big 12 to sweep the Cougars. So big accomplishment there.
You didn't need to add that.
Oh, okay. Just throwing it out there.
Basketball season's over. at least the college season's over. Both men's and women's title games have happened. Very nearly UConn men's women double. Just kidding. It wasn't nearly at all. If you watched that game last night, you'll know that UConn wasn't in that game. The 15-point final margin is closer than the game actually felt. Their game plan was, we're going to have Zach Eadie do everything. And Zach Eadie did what, like 31? When I turned it off, he had 31 of their 52 points. But that was it. He had no help.
Yeah, he was, yeah, that was what I gathered.
He had a great game in terms of like performance in a national title game, 31 points and whatever, how many boards and whatever shots altered. But the fact that Matt Painter couldn't find anybody else around him to contribute points, it's kind of on you, dude. UConn made it just look easy. They're just way good. On the women's side, South Carolina handled Iowa.
Wow.
En route to their, can't even tell you how many national titles, but 38-0 season?
Yes, 38-0. And Caitlin Clark, kind of similar to what happened with Purdue, except not as one-sided, but outside of her, they weren't getting much done, and they weren't stopping South Carolina. South Carolina was just so dominant.
Yep.
Yeah, there was no way that anybody was going to beat that team that night. And over the last three seasons, South Carolina is a combined 110-3 with two national championships. And one of those three losses being to Iowa last year in the Final Four. They're pretty salty.
Well, that's how Iowa got to the national title game 2 years in a row. Sorry. Yeah. Back to back.
I don't think. Yeah, I guess you're right.
So their loss to Iowa in the Final Four would have been 2 years ago.
Maybe so. Maybe I have something wrong there. But I'm correct on the record.
No. Yes, they lost last year in the Final Four because Iowa made the national title game 2 years in a row. South Carolina wasn't a repeat like UConn was. We're getting repeats crossed here.
There you go.
In terms of Texas Tech men's basketball, waiting to hear how that roster's filling out. We've heard about some of the guys that have been on campus. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Getting ahead of ourselves, Michael. We're just kind of like stumbling into our agenda here. There is football news to talk about. Baron Moore no longer practicing. What prompted that conversation? Is it a concern? And then we'll do recaps and previews for baseball. But before we get any more into football or basketball, Michael, we've teased it for a while. We share the news on Twitter, but if you haven't seen that yet, we are officially part of the College Huddle. College Huddle has quickly become the largest independent college sports community on the internet. And as Texas Tech's lone representative, we are excited for this opportunity, not only for us, but for you, the fan of 23 Personnel. With this collaboration, with this community, what you can expect is more opportunities for us to be on other shows and for them to be on our show. We are going to have more guests, College Huddle guests. They are going to help us preview opponents, break it down, chop it up, whatever you want to do. It will help us expand our reach and our platform across the nation. Michael, did I mention College Huddle is the largest independent college sports community?
You might mention that.
Yeah.
60,
I think there's 60 shows and growing. I did include the map as part of our announcement earlier today. But as part of College Huddle, we have access to an abundant amount of resources to help us continually grow and produce the best possible show for you. Better audio, visuals, graphics, all kinds of good stuff. Anyways, so our show's not moving. That's one thing you can count on. You're not going to have to say you're going to go find us on another podcast stream. You're not going to have to resubscribe. You're not going to wade through, if you want to listen to us and nobody else, not going to have to wade through a week's worth of shows that don't apply to your listening habits. We're not moving, but what we are doing is we are expanding. So same bat place, same bat time, same bat channel, whatever you want to call it. Our show is going to be here, but it's going to be bigger, better for you, the fan. You can also follow The College Huddle on Twitter for the rest of the network news. Other shows, we will have, there will be a Big 12 network of shows. We are already in the works to have a schedule of those shows and collaborations put together. And then there's going to be a nationwide, but there will be one for just about every conference and group of five that you could imagine. Michael, we've got shows covering Old Dominion Monarchs. We've got shows covering the Florida Atlantic Panthers. The Ohio State, Florida State, Texas Tech, Texas, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, all the ones that you would expect. So be on the lookout for that. We are in on the ground floor and going to be a part of how this thing is going to be shaped moving forward. Because yours truly is on the board.
You're on the board?
We're on the board, man.
Man, you're serving on so many boards.
Two. I'm on two different boards.
Oh, okay. That's two boards.
Two more than I was last year. Anyways,
but College Huddle. This is a big deal. This will be great because we'll have a lot easier time being able to reach out to somebody for an opposing team. Likewise for them, they can come to us whenever they're rolling through Lubbock or whenever they're going to play Texas Tech, host Texas Tech. And we can offer some insight and they can offer theirs back. A lot of back and forth here. So yeah, looking forward to it. Good to have a network and a lot of folks on board, just trying to collaborate and help each other grow.
Yeah. And at the time, it wasn't official, but, there is an NC State podcast within the network. Unfortunately they reached out to another Texas Tech podcast to do their preview for the dance, but
it's fine. We won't hold it against them. We'll cross paths with NC State again someday.
Probably, unfortunately.
Kindred spirits with the Wolfpack.
Yeah. I'm waiting for this thing to load. If you're watching this on YouTube, I'm going to drop in the commercial, the ad for the network. If you're listening, you get to enjoy the audio of it. Timestamp it, clip it, head on over to YouTube to catch the video piece of it on YouTube about the 16-minute mark. Audio, we're a little behind 13 minutes because of the little pre-show we do there. Moments away.
Oh, moments away. I want you to know that I couldn't hear the intro music, just FYI, if that affects your audio settings.
It was being weird on my computer. It should be okay. Fine here.
Okay.
But we'll see.
We'll do it live.
We're going to do it live. All right, here we go.
In this new era of college football, where old-fashioned media just won't cut it, I'm proud to present a new voice for college football fans, The College Huddle, your number one source for fan-driven college podcasts.
All right, I was wrong. 68 podcasts within the network, Michael. 68.
Seems kind of like a big deal.
The graphic is in that video. So if you want to see it, it's embedded. part of the recording now. So
we have permission to use that. Yeah. No one's going to sue us.
They told us. They said, hey, you should use this. So
that's nice.
Anyways. All right. So be on the lookout for what's next as we continue to grow this show and take it nationwide with the college huddle. All right. Football, Michael. What was it? A week ago, maybe? Almost a week ago. It's Wednesday, I believe, actually. Joey McGuire puts out a statement. Almost like the way it read, it sounded like it was in response to a question he was asked. But he wasn't like it.
It was just a statement.
There was like no context to it. So it was like unprompted almost.
I didn't even read it at first. I just thought,
What are all these words? And it was like, I don't know. It the tone of it felt weird. Like, here, I'm going to pull it up and I'm going to read it. I'm going to try to remove my tone from it. Oh my gosh. With spring camp underway, it's got quite the full timeline. I don't know. Like it was strange, and I want to get your take on it after I reread it for you. Once I get there, I'm still scrolling.
You're still scrolling. What are you scrolling at?
I'm scrolling.
I've got a link. I've got a link in the notes, brother.
My goodness. Yeah, I was on my phone. All right, here it is. First and foremost, if we were to play a game today, Baron Morton would be our starting quarterback. This decision was made in the best interest of Baron's health going into next season. Baron will resume full football activities later this summer. As I've said for the past several months, we have got to develop depth this spring, including at the quarterback position. With this decision being made today, it allows us to divide our reps over the back half of spring ball to find out who our number two quarterback will be. Baron is unquestionably the leader of our offense and has proven that with his performance this spring. At the same time, this is a great opportunity for the rest of our quarterback room to go out and compete to see who will be the next guy up when needed. All right.
Can you explain to me why all these statements have to be center justified? When did this start? I feel like this has been the last decade or so, and it just drives me nuts.
Maybe because of where
you're the PR guy. Do y'all send out statements center justified?
We don't send out statements in a graphic. So
okay,
no,
fair.
Statements we have are very, very formally formatted. And not made up in Photoshop. But, yeah. It feels very defensive. It was unprompted. Like, as I've said, all this time, we've got to do these things, and this is what we're going to do. But for now, we're going to take out our starting quarterback. Well, you're worried about a non-contact position being injured in the spring after 3.5 months of down/recovery time. So my concern is his shoulder still hasn't healed.
I think he's getting Tommy John surgery. I think this is what's happening.
Well, that's on his elbow.
I know. Totally different thing.
So I don't know. It raised more questions and concerns than it did of anything else.
I do think he has to get ahead of it though, because he's made this decision for whatever reason. Either Baron's not 100% and or he truly just thinks Baron's light years above everybody and these other two guys need some work. And if he was going to implement that plan, it was going to get noticed in practice really quickly. And there were going to be think pieces in the Lubbock AJ and on name your favorite subscription sports web zone for Red Raider stuff. And why isn't Baron Morton getting reps? He's not getting any reps at the QB position. He wasn't even suited up today. You know, I think if he's truly making that decision, whatever the reasoning is, he had to get ahead of it, especially with the spring game coming up. Because if Baron Morton's not playing in the spring game, or if he only plays one series or something, I think a lot of folks would start writing their own narratives. And we're still going to, because that's what we do. Not all of the information has been given, but it's at least reasoning for why, or supposed reasoning for why we won't be seeing him as much.
Yeah.
Maybe he's sending him to the minor leagues or something.
Well, so you talk about, like, in the statement, you talk about wanting to develop depth.
Sure, a fair point.
Sure. You want to get ahead of it. Cause it's like, yeah, if they were to start putting him on a pitch count or whatever you want to call it and reducing his throws, it probably would have been noticed and it probably would have been brought up and they would have been asking about it and he was just being proactive. So on the PR side of me gets that. The PR side of me would not have written it this way. So it's almost like he was advised to put out a statement, but then who advised him did not write the statement for him. Or maybe that's just not the relationship. I don't know. But like it's crossed. Like
it's crossed.
The tactic I believe in, the execution was D minus.
Okay. Okay.
Here's another thing that you're not addressing. Okay. So you want to make sure that Baron Morton is healthy. Well, if he's the unquestioned starter, he's never been through an off season where he was the starter and taking starter reps and developing timing and relationships and all whatever with the receivers.
Correct.
At this point last year, it was Shuck. And even more so the year before that. This year he gets 7 practices as a starter and will be held out until basically summer workouts begin. So, I mean, okay, he's missing 8 practices, scrimmages, spring game, whatever. Is that going to be all that detrimental? That's at some level, yes, but ultimately, you know, we'll never know. But I don't know, it just came off like just really strange. The tone of it was just like I said, very defensive. Because like he starts first and foremost, if we were to play a game today, Baron Morton would be our starting quarterback. Like he's answering a question that nobody's asked.
Well, which means he's healthy, right? Why would you start a quarterback who's not healthy enough to play?
Or guys 2 through 4 are that bad?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's an argument to be made there. Judging by Tech's track record for the last decade. What are the odds that Baron Morton takes every snap he's meant to take this season?
I mean, if you subscribe to like past history being like any kind of predictor, like it's not good.
Yeah. And so, but last year, Baron Morton was QB2. Okay. You can live with that. Year before you had kind of 3 starting quarterbacks, basically. You could live with that. But this year, the guy who was QB2 is QB1 now. And then the other 2 guys, I mean, is Strong still there?
Yeah.
So he's the only one who's seen game time as a quarterback.
Burns is with the baseball team. You've got Cameron West or Cameron Brown.
I was trying to load the roster, but it kept freezing and the website wasn't working. It's like Joey intentionally doesn't want us to look at the roster right now.
The JUCO transfer. And then you got the true freshman, Will Hammond.
That's right. I forgot we had Hammond.
Honestly?
That's comforting. That's a little bit comforting.
I don't like the options behind Barron. So I again, like you could have also accomplished this without coming out and saying anything. Like you could have addressed it when it comes up. It's like, hey, like we know that Morton is our number one guy. We're focused on finding out who 2 through 4 are. And we're going to see who steps up.
It could have been a 15-second answer after someone noticed that Morton was not as active in practice one day. Or
he didn't roll with the ones.
Only,
what's going on?
Yeah, or only played one series in the spring game or whatever it is. And he could have just said that. But I don't know. The statement does kind of make it weird.
So that's all. I mean.
Okay. I'm with you. It's kind of strange. It's a strange clarification that no one asked for. But apparently is needed. It kind of feels like when you were doing something you weren't supposed to in the house, like you were playing around with the football. And the second your mom gets home, I broke the lamp. I had to tell you. Okay. All right. What happened? Why did you break the lamp? Anyway, then you got to walk it back and go through the whole thing.
Our toddler is the worst about this. So right now, like he's in that phase of development where like he understands things when he's not supposed to be doing something. And so like, we'll say, hey, what are you doing? Don't worry about me. Okay. Well now as a 3-year-old, all of our alarms are going off. Like what is happening? What are you getting into? And we come.
I'm 100% worrying about you.
He's got a marker out, or he's got like this little stamp out, and he's covered his arms, or some random piece of paper. It's like, okay, it could be worse, like, but also like, let's focus here. Like, if we want to play with markers, great. Let's draw on paper. Let's put stamps on the paper. Not your arm.
There's ways to do this.
Luckily, it wasn't like the wall or your bed or something, but. But yeah, that's very much like, oh, what are you doing? Don't worry about it. Well, now I'm worried about it.
Don't worry about me, Chief. I got this.
Yeah. Well, see, now I'm worried about Morton. I wasn't worried about Morton earlier. Now I am.
Exactly. Same thing.
So, all right. Basketball, Michael. Big dance is over. UConn national titles. First, I don't want to go into that. There's so many people talking about, oh, they're repeaters for the first time. Whatever. Who cares?
Yeah. Who cares? I didn't watch any of it. It wasn't on purpose. I had something kind of come up family wise and I had to deal with that. And then by the time I got home, it was after 9 basically. And I was just kind of, okay, I'm done.
We had a baseball game last night. So by the time we got home and kids in bed, I watched like the last couple minutes of the first half. And then I had the second half on, but I was just doing other things. And it was like a 6-point game at the half. I was like, okay, it's close. But like the second half, I was like, oh no, this isn't close at all.
Purdue, yeah, I probably watched more. I watched more Final Four. Well, absolutely, because I didn't watch any of this game. But Purdue, I was surprised. I should have watched it. I'm surprised that they got housed as bad as they did. I was really impressed with their big man when I watched the semifinal.
Yeah.
But what can you do if that's the only guy you're going to get the ball to and you're going to not produce anyone else that can score a bucket?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to lose. You're going to lose badly on a big stage.
Yeah. And we talk about the women's game. I watched none of that.
Yeah, but. Yeah. I'll run through it a little bit because I already kind of mentioned some of the cool stuff I wanted to mention. So kind of a similar deal. Caitlin Clark had 30, but she wasn't getting a whole lot of help. Meanwhile, South Carolina was getting a ton of help from the bench. They had, 37 points off the bench, including 22 from Tessa Johnson. She scored 22 points in 18 minutes, 7 of 11 shooting, 3 of 6 from 3. Iowa had 0 points from the bench. A giant goose egg. They also were out-rebounded. Where did I have that? 51-29. And they allowed South Carolina to have 48 points in the paint. South Carolina had 30 second chance points because Iowa kept missing and they were not playing well. But I don't think it was, I don't think it was one of those, oh, well, you know, on a better night, I think Iowa could have gotten them. I don't know. I don't think there's, you play that same game four or five times and Iowa might win once. South Carolina was just dominant. But that was really all I wanted to mention was just aside from starting out on a 10-0 lead, Iowa just got outgassed the rest of the game. After that 10-0 lead, South Carolina went on to score 49, outscore them 49-36 in the remainder of the first half. And it got kind of close. It got within six or seven in the second half. And then, you know, Iowa turned it over. Or South Carolina would just dominate in the paint and take care of business. It was some really good basketball, but not if you were an Iowa fan. So congratulations to South Carolina. Second championship in 3 years. They've won 110 games in the same span.
It's wild.
Unreal.
You want to talk about the coaching carousel or the Texas Tech roster first?
Let's do the coaching carousel since we're kind of touching on the
okay
rest of what is this?
Can we just like acknowledge and just be baffled at how SMU has turned the men's basketball coaching world upside down? SMU.
So explain this to me because I'm not following.
Okay, so SMU hires USC's Andy Enfield, right? So they got rid of Lanier or whatever his name was, hired Andy Enfield. USC backfills their open position with Arkansas's Eric Musselman. Okay. Apparently Musselman's a West Coast guy, or at least really, really appreciates the opportunity to live and work in LA. Cool. John Calipari from Kentucky is now hired to go over and coach at Arkansas.
Is that final? Is that really happening now?
As far as I can tell.
Okay.
What I think is also funny, so the Arkansas job was open for a few days, and everybody was linked to it. Like they had like Chris Beard, Jerome Tang, I've seen Scott Drew. Cal was like way under the radar. Like he just like they snuck him in there.
Were any of them saying stuff like, "That's going to be hard to recruit Fayetteville"?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Probably not.
And apparently not with the Tyson family, the chicken people that are the NIL. I don't know why those two got confused in my head. NIL sponsors for Arkansas, which will definitely help definitely help Calipari's recruiting strategy. He just goes after one and dones. And maybe that's kind of why Kentucky was getting tired of him. And like, maybe he saw the writing on the wall, was on his way out. Because his style of just recruiting the best high school guys was kind of getting figured out. Like you're leaving yourself kind of vulnerable to good and old teams. Mm-hmm. You just can't out talent everybody when you've got a bunch of like Warren Washington's kind of lumbering around the opposite team. And you're like, there's a lot of value there to having a guy that's been around 5 years and four programs. Namely like they've learned how to lose and not collapse. Whereas, you know, when you take the best of the best, they may have never lost a meaningful competitive game. So SMU firing their coach right now has Kentucky looking for a new coach. When John Calipari moved to Arkansas, Eric Musselman from Arkansas went to USC. Jerome Tang and Chris Beard both got the Arkansas job. Parlayed into at least raises, if not extensions. Tang had his contract kind of reworked a little bit. There's a statement out there from, not a statement, but like a new clause kind of put in there that the athletic director is going to be not involved in disciplinary issues.
Okay.
Which stems out of, like, I guess it was the basketball issue from earlier, right? Like when they had their top transfer basically get suspended. Anyways, he uses the Arkansas opening to kind of get that new clause worked into his contract. There was an interesting theory from Pop Isaac's dad about the downstream effects that could get, if somebody were to hire Scott Drew, would Baylor then go after McCasland? Where would that leave Tech? You know.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things that could be a problem. We've already seen that happen.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, SMU hiring infield. It's got John Calipari. Is it John? It's John, right?
Pretty sure. I just know it's Coach Cal.
Yeah, John Calipari.
Yeah, of course it's John. Like I said.
Yeah.
Never doubted.
AP News. Athletic 8 hours ago, John Calipari announces he's leaving Kentucky.
I did want to just kind of mention, speaking of Kentucky, my wife, of course, grew up there. I've mentioned that. And she has a friend who's a huge UK fan who posts stuff all the time, who went completely radio silent after their Oakland loss. She just completely quit posting until yesterday. And I think my wife told me she had 23 posts yesterday.
Goodness.
Sharing different news articles, different things about Calipari, different things about all that. And so I asked my wife dumbly. Have you heard that Coach Cal's possibly going to Arkansas? And she's like, of course I have, because I follow this Facebook friend who's been posting about this all day. Oh, okay. Fair enough. So shout out to that fan who's got something to post about again after taking a few weeks off. Think things through. Backpack across Appalachia. Find themselves.
Speaking of the last team to repeat as national titles, Billy Donovan, suspected to be the front runner to come back to the college game. This is before the national title game, because I think there were also some thought that they're going to be running after Nate Oates and Hurley from UConn. But
carousel
anyways,
season.
Yeah. And all the while,
we're not part of it yet.
Texas Tech is trying to fill out our roster, which may be its own little carousel. We missed announcing it on the show last week by like a few minutes. Like we kind of like wrapped up our notes and then jumped on, missed that Devin Cambridge had announced his, or it was leaked that he was intending to announce to enter the portal and was maybe in the portal 12, 18 hours.
Yeah. I don't think it was a full 24.
And then it came back like, no, he'll be back. So I don't know if it was testing the waters or if there was some signals crossed or there was some fancy footwork there done in the wobble and got him back. But he's,
I think it's good.
At least now part of the Red Raider crew moving forward. Other guys that we've talked about that we knew about, Kyron Lindsey, Pop Isaacs, Robert Jennings, Demarion Williams, nobody else since then, I believe.
I don't think so. I haven't seen anybody else. And of course, someone's going to announce while we're recording again.
Yeah. We've hosted at least one recruit, one transfer. And he was expected to be, to have Tech in his front runner. But maybe he's waiting to make the announcement a little bit later. In the sense that Micah Hudson was a silent commit for a long time. Not that this transfer is a Micah Hudson level talent and that he's highly sought after by basically everybody, but in the sense that he commits and announces on his own terms. So there's that. If you're a part of the Parlay Picadors and in that recruiting and transfer portal thread, you could say, I mean, you're in on everybody until you're not. There are so many names out there. And if you're wanting to keep up with that, man, all power to you. I'll just wait till there's some official announcement. But as of right now, April 9th, there are no high school recruits and you have yet to add any transfers to this class. I think your last guy you added last year was in July. And I think it was it Davion Williams? Davion. Why am I butchering names? Let me see what
one. Who are you saying?
Let me see if I can look up his the timeline here on when he committed. Darian. I said Davion. I was stuck on Harmon, but I knew that wasn't right. Darian Williams. I believe Darian Williams was the last one to commit. And what an addition he was.
Yes, and but, one of the first to kind of announce that he's... I don't know if he ever really announced he was staying, but when Pop entered the portal, I think he had a graphic or something kind of saying, you know, thanks a lot or thanks for everything to Pop, which sure made it look like, as you go, I'm going to stay. Kind of read between the lines type graphic.
Yeah.
Okay, what else we got?
Sorry, I was trying to find it and whatever. I'm not on this site enough to do that. Okay. I think we'll leave the roster where it is until we hear anything official, but...
Anything, yeah. Anything at all.
Let's move over to the hardball, talk a little softball, and then finish up with baseball. What do you say?
Yeah, sounds good. Quick on softball. So... The Red Raiders are still seventh in Big 12. They did take care of business against ACU, Abilene Christian, this past Wednesday, winning 15-6. They lost the series to Baylor and Waco 2-1, but they did win that first game. So that was a good win there. No midweek this week or next, but they will be back in Lubbock hosting Kansas this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And Kansas is... pretty salty. They're 21 and 12 with a tie. I wanted to look up that tie, but I forgot. They're 10-5 in the Big 12, which puts them at fourth. And I mainly wanted to kind of rumble through that so I could get to what Seeing Scarlet has to say about the softball team, because two things. One, you should be following Seeing Scarlet, as we mention them every week. They go a lot more in depth in women's sports. They cover all sports, but definitely more in depth into women's sports than we do. And they launched their new website a couple weeks ago, seeing-scarlet.com. That's seeing-scarlet.com. They have a new post, and I can't tell if Sibby or Shelby wrote it. So that's the only thing I would like to give credit to whoever wrote it, but it's a mailbag post that they just put up today. You should be able to find it. I'm not going to tell you everything about it because I want you to go read it. But the question is, can Texas Tech softball make the postseason for the first time since 2019? And they lay out a pretty good, you know, pretty good path to do it. They really kind of need to win. What did they have? 4 of their next 12 games. But, you know, a couple of those games are against number 3, Oklahoma State, number 4, Texas, number 21, Kansas. So that's the big series that's coming up right now. That's going to be kind of a big deal to try to sweep this series or at least get a series win. And they did point to the fact that, you know, if they're able to do that, they're 4-8 right now in conference wins. And they, you know, Shelby or Sibby, whoever wrote this, thinks that possibly 8 wins in conference would kind of get them up there. And for reference, Missouri got in last season with a 7-17 conference record and a 37th ranked RPI. And I think that Tech's RPI is 37th right now, exactly 37th. So there's a path. She goes into a lot more detail on it. But anyway, one of the main things here is seeing Scarlett's killing it as always. Go to their website, seeing-scarlett.com. Check out this post. Check out their other posts. And let's see if the softball team can continue some success and get into the postseason for the first time in 5 years under a second-year head coach.
Yeah. I did, because I just couldn't let it go. I did find out the timeline on the
of course you did.
Basketball wise, Darian Williams was not the last one. He was one of the first. He was back in March of 2023. Then it went Chance McMillan in April, Warren Washington middle of May, Devin Cambridge end of June, Joe Toussaint was last on 4th of July.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, we may be looking to July till
hopefully not July.
We see a full roster.
Yeah. I was gonna say, and that's about the time they do their team retreat at the end of the summer before school starts. Baseball's coming off currently a 6-game win streak, Michael. They swept the Houston Cougars, they swept Stanford Cardinal, and they won game 3 against UCF in Orlando. Obviously wanted the series victory. But we talked about that last week against UCF. 24-9, 8-7. So you are above 500 in Big 12 play. You know who can't say that, Michael? TCU.
Ah, there it is.
Just really quickly, the Big 12 standings. You are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You're 8th, but not everybody's played the same number of games. So you're tied for the most number of wins. Nobody has more than 8 wins. You have 8 wins. UCF has 8 wins. Oklahoma has 8 wins. West Virginia has 8 wins.
But UCF continues to get a lot of love from all the polls after taking down little old Texas Tech in Orlando.
Yeah. Oh. Congrats to them.
Yeah. Happy for them.
But West Virginia and Oklahoma are 8-4 in their Big 12 record, whereas UCF and Texas Tech are 8-7. You've played a series more than they have because, one, you'll end your season on a non-conference series, if you will, or a little tournament with Arizona State and UNLV, where I think everybody else will be playing. And then you also started early. Anyways, so the bright side is you're tied up there with most number of wins. You just have lost 3 more games than West Virginia and Oklahoma. And West Virginia has fielded a good baseball team. Oklahoma's fielded a good baseball team. I don't think either one of them were projected to be up there. I think it was, we all know it was. It was TCU, who is almost dead last. They're 5-10 in Big 12 play. Oklahoma State, 7-5. Texas, 7-5. Kansas State, 7-5. These are all teams that were up there. Picked right around you. You were picked 4th. You're 8-7. So lots to shake out. But this last weekend, you swept Houston, and you did it in frustrating fashion, if you can call a sweep frustrating. in a series where you scored 29 runs. I mean, 9.9 runs per game. Nope, more than that. I'm not doing that math right. 39 runs. So you scored 13 runs per game. Friday, you win 12-9. This was a game where the wind was definitely a factor, but it was more like it felt like it was blowing across the field. Texas Tech jumps out on top in the bottom of the first with three runs. Houston ties it, top of the second with three runs. Then Houston jumps all over you in the top of the fourth with four runs in the fourth. You get two back in the bottom. So after four, you're down 7-5. Houston adds one more in both the fifth and the sixth, but you tacked on four in the fifth. So you're at 9-7. You take the lead 9-7 in the fifth. Houston gets one run back in the sixth, 9-8. 9-9. They tie it in the sixth. And then you put on three in the seventh to finish the score and to get up 12-9. Scoring there at the end, you had an RBI single wild pitch that scored a run and then an RBI double to get you those three runs. The wind was strange all weekend. And it seems to be this time of year, which we say all the time, but where it's like you got a great week of weather and the weekend is wonky.
Yeah.
Saturday, probably the most frustrating of the three, at least for me when I was watching it. Houston scores first, top of the second. Then you score 12 unanswered. At the end of the fourth inning, you were up 12-2, and you're just like, we got this.
Just cruise to the finish line there, yeah.
And then Houston puts up four runs in the fifth, four runs in the sixth, and there goes your lead. Because at that point, now you're down, or you're not down. It's 12-10. And you're like, what are we doing? You do get two runs back in the sixth, 14-10. You get your 15th run in the eighth. But Houston, man, they make it interesting. They scored two runs in the ninth. And if I'm not mistaken, they had the winning run or tying run on. Top of the ninth, they get a double, a single. So you got runners on the corners there. DeJesus singles. So nobody out. One run is in, two runners on. Their big bat that also pitches, reaches on a fielder's choice. So you get runners on the corners with just one out. Tulamero, sack fly to center. So you've got a runner on, two outs, but they've already pushed in two runs. And you weren't feeling good about it, but you did get the final out with a pop fly to right field, which with that wind was a little precarious. But you win that one 15-12. You take this series. Sunday, you go for the sweep. Houston, I mean, obviously, they score their first three. They score three runs, two in the top of the first, one in the third. Sorry. Two in the first, one in the second. You score in the bottom of the first, but then you pile on seven in the third. That was your big inning. You did follow up with three more in the fourth. So you put up 10 unanswered there in the third and the fourth inning. You started off with a single by Damian Bravo, who's leading all Red Raiders in all of the Big 12. And batting average, Bazell, Green, Woodcox. You get four consecutive singles to get your first two runs in. They change pitcher. You walk the bases loaded. Washburn gets walked, loads the bases. McGee hits a pop-up. We thought, man, that could go. But that's your first out, bases loaded. Tracer Lopez reaches on a fielder's choice. Washburn is out. So you score a run. You got runners on first and third. Then Pompey walks to load the bases. Gavin Cash destroys a ball to left center for a grand slam to put you up. You don't really ever look back from there. I will say, though, your pitching this weekend, it was hit or miss, because it felt like you got your big lead and then you didn't go to your best bullpen arms, and they let your lead kind of evaporate, and then you put in your good guys. Or like, I mean, Josh Sanders, I think, pitched in all three games. He pitched Sunday. He did not pitch on Saturday. Jack Washburn gets an inning on Saturday. He gets the ninth inning. You know, he goes from a starter to mop up duty. And even then, he gives up three hits and two runs in the one inning of work on Saturday. But Sanders pitched Sunday and Friday. So he gets the win Friday and Sunday coming out of the pen there. He goes the final three innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, three strikeouts on Friday. Ryan Free got the start on Friday. So since UCF, you've kind of shaken up your starting pitching rotation, because it used to be Kyle Robinson on Friday, Mac Hewer on Saturday, Jack Washburn on Sunday. And then the weird travel issues, and maybe there was something with Hewer's arm or health or whatever. You end up rolling with Ryan Free on one of those days, and he does all right. Jack Washburn has kind of been moved off of the starting weekend position. So you've been going Free on Friday, Robinson on Saturday, Hewer on Sunday. Let me double check that. Yeah, Hewer went on Sunday this past weekend. Your pitching stats, I think, interesting enough, at least to me, they're not great. But the way it started off this season, man, it felt like your starters weren't all that great, but your bullpen was. Since then, the way that you've kind of managed your bullpen and had to shift some of your starters, those two numbers are coming together. Your starters ERA is still a little bit more elevated than your bullpen. Your starters are 5.7, 570 ERA. Bullpen is 542. Both those numbers are entirely too high. The WHIP is almost identical. 1.61 for your starters and 1.60 for your bullpen. Opponent batting average, 281 for against your starters, 277 against your bullpen. Unless you're named Josh Sanders, because my goodness, he's thrown 25 and two thirds inning this year, giving up 16 hits. Opponents are hitting 170 against him. ERA just above two with a 0.78 WHIP. He's appeared in the most number of games of any pitcher on the Tech roster, 16 games, including the two this weekend. Another guy that you're seeing a lot of is Parker Hutera, 18 and a third. His opponent batting average, 268, ERA 0.49, which is impressive. Somebody else with that same number of innings, and that's not the same kind of production, but so Hutera has 18 and a third. Jacob Rogers had 18 and two thirds. Rogers' ERA, Michael, 8.19. opponents are batting 342 against them.
Yikes. That's not good.
No, it's not. But Ryan Free, because of like now it's kind of a weird mix where he's thrown in 10 games. He started two. His ERA is 663. Opponents are batting 312 against him. Parrish was kind of noticeably absent this weekend. Didn't pitch. His as wild as he kind of sometimes is, one of your best bullpen arms, ERA of 366, opponents are batting 257 against him through almost 20 full innings pitched. Only other bullpen guy that's thrown more innings is Josh Sanders. Like I said, at almost 26 innings. Your starters, so Kyle Robinson, coming up on 42 innings pitched. ERA is now just over 4. So that's settling down quite a bit. Opponent batting average 259, whip of 149. Jack Washburn, 27 and a third innings. His ERA is just under 7. And the thing that gets him in trouble is just how well he gets seen like the second time through the lineup. Opponents are batting 321 against him. Hewer has been roughed up a little bit lately. His ERA is up over 5 now, 503. Opponents are batting 258 against him. That's through 34 innings now. Erdman has a couple of midweek starts. Zane Petty's got 4 starts. Now Ryan Free's got 2 weekend starts under his belt. You did see somebody you haven't, like, he threw his first innings of the season this weekend. Carson Baugh. Did not record an out, gave up 1 hit, 3 runs, all 3 of them earned, 1 walk, 1 home run. So, opponent batting average is 333 against him. ERA is infinite. 99.99.
Oof.
Because he didn't record an out. So he doesn't have any kind of devising number there. There's no denominator. So.
The limit does not exist.
The limit does not exist. So what does that do this week? You've got, like I said, ACU tomorrow, where you'll probably see Erdman out there. I would love to see Huffling on the mound at some point tomorrow, going against his old team. Huffling hasn't pitched in a while, so maybe he was dealing with something, just a confidence issue. But his ERA 737, opponents are batting 441 against him. This would be a great opportunity to get back on the mound and get right against your old team. And then you hit the road, you continue your road trip into Fort Worth, going on from Abilene, Friday, Saturday, Sunday against TCU. TCU has not been great, Michael. Struggling. Their starting pitching has not been great. They're not that far removed from you as a team. Texas Tech, their ERA is 542. TCU's is 501. They had a starter go a complete game, against Oklahoma State, but he's 3-2 on the season through his eight starts. And that's Peyton Tolley, 374 ERA through 45 2/3 innings pitched, giving up 29 hits, 19 runs, all 19 of them earned. Basically a 3-1 strikeout to walk ratio, but he struck out 72 batters, but that also means he's walked 19 in. Six doubles, 3 home runs. Opponents are batting 180 against him. So like a Josh Sanders, but getting starting pitching innings out of him. Cole Klecker, also one of the starters you'll see probably this weekend. through seven starts. His ERA is up there near seven at 6.68. Opponents are batting 3.18 against him through 31 innings, 41 hits, 25 runs, 31 strikeouts to nine walks. And then the other starter they've been throwing on the weekends has been Luis Rodriguez, 28 and two-thirds innings pitched, ERA just over 3.14. Only given up 10 runs, but he's only had three starts. He's been in 12 games, moved into the starting role recently as a starter, three games. Opponents batting 241 against him. They have, have a handful of trusted guys coming out of their bullpen with 10, 13, 14, and 15 appearances. Kyle Ayers, Chase Hoover, Ben Abelt, and Zachary Collier. Those are the guys out of the bullpen. Best of that bunch would be Ben Abelt with a 1.86 ERA. Opponents batting 1.64 against him. Otherwise, Collier's got a 4.87 ERA. Hoover's got a 7.36. Ayers has a 6.59. So they get called on a bunch, but they're not like shut down guys. Offensively, Michael, obviously nobody is really touching what you're doing as a team because you lead the Big 12 in where did I put those numbers? Where do they go?
There's a link at the bottom.
Yeah, but I had it written out. There it is. You are leading the Big 12 in average runs, runs per game, hits, doubles, slugging percentage, walks, and on base percentage. And you're second in home runs and hit by pitches. So you are getting on base every way possible. And you're leading the conference in just about all of it. Damian Bravo is your best batter and has been all season. And it's not slowed down. He is still batting .452 on the season, which was where it was last week. But the guy that was in second place has dropped a little bit. Second now is Jared Thomas at Texas at .392. So he has a 60-point advantage in batting average over the next guy. And he's doing it for power too. Like he's crushing lots of doubles. He's not leading the team in home runs. That's Gavin Cash still, but sorry, I'm trying to get to the stats page on the Big 12 to tell you those double figures. All right. Damian Bravo does lead the conference in doubles at 19. Nick English at Kansas State has 15. Bravo has four home runs. Jalen Flores is leading the conference at 13. Josh Cross at Cincinnati has 12. Max Bellew at Texas has 11. Your first guy, like I said, Gavin Cash with 8 is tied for 6th. But speaking of TCU, though, they've got 4 starters, at least that have meet the minimum requirements for starters. That are batting over 300, starting with Anthony Silva at 300, Chase Brunson 308, Sam Myers 325, Logan Maxwell 354. Myers out of that bunch has played the least, 25 games and 19 starts. But Chase Brunson, 31 games, 30 starts. Anthony Silva, 29 starts, 29 games. They have a couple other guys. Peyton Tolley at one point was also batting. We talked about how he threw a complete game last weekend, batting 191. So not the best bat, but they do have a guy batting 1,000 and a slugging percentage of 2,000, OPS of 3,000. He's appeared in one game, Michael. One at bat. He had a double.
There you go. Retire.
Can't really beat that unless you go out there and hit a home run. Offensively, just as a team, their team batting average 271, Texas Tech 324. Slugging percentage 548, TCU's is 412. On base, Texas Tech is getting on at 439, TCU 371. You've hit 30 more home runs than TCU, so they are not a power-hitting team. 55-25, you've outscored them by 130 runs, 328-198. Struck out just about the same, 247 for Texas Tech, 236 for TCU. You've attempted 36 stolen bases and were successful 33 times. TCU has stolen 45 or attempted 45, successful 36. Defensively, the numbers are a little bit closer. Teams are batting 252 against TCU, 282 against you. ERA, we talked about a little earlier, pretty close, 550 for Tech, 501 for TCU. Walks are within four, 143 for Tech, 139 for TCU. You've given up a ton of home runs, 42. TCU's only given up 27. So both of those figures, home runs hit and home runs surrendered, are about, they're pretty close to each their own. Whereas, you know, you've hit 55, but you've given up 42. They've hit 25, but given up 27. You've given up 202 runs. They've only allowed 164. So much closer games for TCU, 198 runs scored for them, giving up 164, where you've scored 328 and given up 202. Strikeouts, they have 343 strikeouts on the season, does their pitching staff, where you have 307. And then they are not committing the errors you are, fielding at 976 to your 968. So which TCU team are you going to get? Are you going to get the team that's figuring it out? Or are they down? Because if they lose this series this weekend, Michael, there's talk, they may be low enough that they may not make the Big 12 tournament, let alone a regional. They may not make the conference tournament to finish the season. So they're down bad and they are, in a spot where they're getting desperate. They're going to be at home. I don't like those two things stacking up against you. You've not played well on the road. And not that you're leading the conference in wins, like you're not in first place. But I think looking up and down the standings and see nobody else has won more games than you have, there may be some complacency there. And you just haven't been great, so...
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Like you said, there's no telling what TCU team's going to show up. And are they going to be hungry and ready for, you know, trying to stay out of the bottom of the Big 12? One thing that kind of worked in their favor is their midweek series against UTRGV was canceled. And that was canceled yesterday before, or Monday, I should say, which was yesterday, before the weather truly hit. But it was definitely going to be a rough time to host two baseball games in Fort Worth on Tuesday and Wednesday. So they called it, but Tech of course will only have the one midweek game, but that means you've got a TCU team that's rested up and will have all the arms ready and available to throw everything they have literally at Texas Tech when they come to town. Whereas Texas Tech will have had to, you know, probably burn some arms and you know, just have another day of travel that TCU didn't have to have, even though it's just a quick 2-hour and 15-minute jaunt over to Abilene, but it's still just something that TCU's not having to deal with. So there's just kind of that vibe too, that off the field vibe of they just have a full week to just kind of heal up and get their minds right and host Texas Tech.
They travel to Abilene next week.
TCU does?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So what a week for ACU baseball to host Texas Tech and TCU.
What a week for Purple Christian Universities.
Sure. They get to play Texas Tech. What a privilege.
Oh, man. Well, and the softball team just played them too. I mean, just, or ACU did.
My goodness.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So DCU will hit the road Tuesday to take on ACU and then down to Austin next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's not that they have to just get through us and then they got like some time off to feel better about how their schedule sets up. Cause, they've got at Texas, Dallas Baptist, Kansas State. Ooh. These are all teams that are just looking to deliver the knockout punch. Then they do get a little bit of a break, I guess. They travel to Waco. Then they have a weekend series versus New Mexico State, a Tuesday game versus Baylor after that, mid-May, and then home versus West Virginia to finish the series, the season. So they've got pretty tough schedule ahead of them outside of the trip to Waco, but even that's not all that favorable, as we found out. If the wind's blowing right off the river, it could be a very defensive ball game. But Texas Tech's got to worry about TCU first. Well, I guess ACU first, then TCU. If you were to get a series win, you've got Arkansas waiting in the wings for you next week.
Yeah.
Very unfavorable. Although it will be favorable to your RPI regardless of the outcome. But let's go through the preview, Michael, because they are just a little bit better offensively than TCU is. Outside of their home run numbers, their home run numbers are about 20. They've hit 20 more than TCU has. Struck out 30 fewer times. But defensively and pitching, they're just on another planet, Michael.
Yeah, light years.
So we'll start there. Arkansas pitching, opponents batting 194 against Arkansas pitchers as a team. Texas Tech opponents are batting 282 against Tech pitching. So it's 100 points there. ERA of 263. They've walked 94 batters, struck out 388.
Yeah.
388 to 94 in terms of the strikeouts to walks. Texas Tech is 307 to 143. So it's 160 there between strikeouts to walks for Texas Tech, 300 between strikeouts to walks for Arkansas. Given up only 20 home runs while they've hit 44 and only allowed 82 runs to be scored against them. Texas Tech has allowed 202 runs while also scoring 328. So that's going to be the matchup there. But like I said, if your offense doesn't travel, I mean, you're going up against a just elite pitching staff. And you'll be doing it on the road. So
that 82 runs works out to 2.7 runs per game is what Arkansas allows. And even though, you know, I kind of came in thinking, well, their offense just really isn't that impressive, I guess. And, but you average out their 223 runs per games, they're winning games at an average of 7.4 runs to 2.7. It's a little bit more impressive to me when I look at it that way, as opposed to comparing the numbers. Sure. Yeah. Texas Tech's got almost 100. They have over 100 more runs scored on the season than Arkansas does. And so you think, well, maybe there's something to exploit there. And then you realize, no, the defense is just that good. They're really hard to hit. And I don't know if you got to the fielding percentage yet, but 0.980 on fielding percentage too. So they're hard to hit. And if they can get you out, they're going to, and they're not going to walk you. Jeez.
Yeah.
Ray of sunshine here.
So Texas Tech is scoring just under 10 runs per game. It's 9.939, whatever it is. The math just worked out too. While giving up six. Um,
So more than double what Arkansas gives up a game.
Yeah, you're winning games 10-6. They're winning games 7-2. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how it goes. But like I said, playing on the road against number one RPI team, it's only going to help. You need an RPI boost if you can continue to put some wins together on your schedule here. RPI is definitely going to help. Losing to Arkansas, it's really only going to help. Like, it can't hurt you RPI wise. Now, if you go over there and you lose big and you, like, your confidence or whatever is broken, or you lose guys to injury, knock on wood, like, that's where playing these games is going to hurt you. But in terms of, like, setting you up to be successful later on, you're playing great competition. If you have aspirations to play postseason baseball, games against Arkansas are going to help you way more than games against ACU are.
Yes. Yes, they are.
All right. Let's wrap this up to what do we learn, Michael? What do you say?
Sounds good.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either.
All right. So there was a certain astrological event that happened yesterday. Do you go out and partake?
I did not.
Do you have your glasses? I did not. Oh, you don't have your glasses?
No, I didn't have any glasses. I had a coworker offer to let me. He had a couple of pairs, and I was just kind of a fuddy-duddy. I was just in kind of one of those moods where I just thought, "Nah, I'm good. Just gonna hang out here in the office." And I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I assumed it would get darker than it did, but it was just kind of seemed like it was cloudy here in Lubbock, at least.
It was. Cloud cover was thin enough you could still see through it.
Yes. I knew that they could see it because they came back in and talked about being able to see it, but it was still not. It wasn't like what some other folks experienced, which I know of. Well, another guy I work with, his wife's a photographer and she teaches photography classes. And so it was really important to get there and try to photograph the totality of it. Anyway, he showed me some of the photos she took yesterday and you could see the solar flares, man.
That's awesome.
I mean, she knocked it out of the park. And so they went to Llano, which always pains me to say, but that's how you say it. So they went to Llano and kind of found a spot away from everybody. And it was just great. And he said that, and I'm sure you've heard this too from other people, but I saw people post the same thing. You know, it went dark and
quiet.
It got quiet. All the crickets started chirping and everything. And the birds got all quiet. And then, you know, it was dark for a couple of minutes and then it was back up. I love seeing the time lapse in Dallas where all the streetlights came on, and it was just bizarre. It would have been cool to partake in it, but I just wasn't in I wasn't in the cosmic mood. How about you?
Similar, and that, like, my mother-in-law and father-in-law drove to Dallas for the weekend and stay with Samantha's older brother. But then they also drove from, you know, he lives up in Denton. They drove down to Ennis, which was like right on the path of like totality. And not that Denton was going to be like out of it. I think they just, if you're going to be there, you might as well go ahead and try to get right underneath the darn thing.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're that close, go for it.
But she also has some interesting takes and theories on, let's just say, the Hang last on. Days.
Okay.
So it was very, very.
No one can predict the day or the time, yet everyone can predict when the eclipse is. And so, therefore,
down to the minute,
how does that qualify as the last days?
Yeah. Anyways.
Anyway, sorry.
It was very important for her to be there. And she had a good time.
Good. Good for her.
I don't even pretend to understand this woman. I just like, yes, Helen. Yes. Sure. That's interesting. Cool story. But anyways, so they were there, and then they drove back, or are driving. No, they drove back today. I had to be in the office for something yesterday, so I had a call that went 1 to 1:30, and so like it ran a few minutes late. So as soon as I got off the call, I went outside, and like the first thing I noticed, one, it was darker than I thought it was going to be because I'd been inside for long enough. Like when I went inside, it had just started, so like not enough for it to change the light. And then I got out, and like it was like seconds away from totality or the peak of it. And it was eerily quiet, and probably because a lot of people were just outside too, like watching it. You'd have a lot of like the traffic noise. But the animal just movement had changed, which is so weird at like 1:30 in the afternoon to hear crickets and birds not to be chirping or all buzzing around like they do. But yeah, like I put my glasses on, I looked up, I saw it. I was like, cool. We drove.
Let's go back to work.
Go back to work. We drove down to Midland back in October, which was the height of that partial one.
The annular eclipse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we made kind of a half day about it because it was on a Saturday. We took the kids out there, and it was like right around lunchtime too. So like we got out, parked, watched the thing, grabbed lunch, then drove back. So it kind of hurt that we had basically just done this like 6 months ago. But I get that like this won't happen again for many, many years, but
yeah, it won't pass over Texas for 200 years, I think, but I think there will be another total eclipse over the United States in 2044, but I haven't looked up to see where it is. Might have to drive a little further.
Assuming we're all still here, Michael.
Assuming we're all still here. Fair enough.
Yeah, and just the circumstances or coincidence, whatever, and this is just very Texas-centric take here, but like to have the totality of it go over basically all of the major metro areas in the state.
Yeah.
Like millions of people in the state of Texas had... Like then they'd have to go very far to see it. Cause it right. Like it literally went over Dallas, Austin, Houston, San Antonio. We weren't all that far removed. I think they still said we got 90% of it. I don't know about El Paso. I'm assuming it's probably the same. But
El Paso's probably they're a little further west.
Well, I know, but like the path of it was like it was southwest and northeast.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, they might have been the same distance from totality as we were, possibly.
Or not that far removed.
Yeah.
From what we had. I don't know. Anyways, that has nothing to do with anything. I just thought it was interesting to think about. That's a Texas take.
Yeah, I know. And I had a weird thing happen this week. Or not weird, but my wife picked up my daughter at school on...
Is that weird?
What? You sorry. Drinking into the microphone?
Does that not mute? Like I'm over here pushing the mute button.
I totally heard that.
Then what the heck does it do?
I don't know.
Because like, you know what? I bet it mutes on the recording. It's like the audio recording. You don't hear it, but over here,
we're good.
Golly, that sucks. I'm sorry. I thought it was muted.
Then he had this smart ass comment. I'm like, brother, you know, you were just slurping up water all over the microphone.
No. Oh my gosh. I'm trying to think of like if I've said something stupid or farted or whatever. I know I've cleared my throat.
I have heard you a lot more than normal. So that would explain it. Just heard you like, I know when you set up and moved your chair around, I heard all that. You probably weren't intended for that.
Yeah, I muted that because I probably groaned and winced into the microphone. As blood flow is returning to my butt. Golly, that's fantastic. Thanks.
That's good. Thanks. It's fine. Hey, the recording will be good. Don't worry about it.
If you're watching this, I'm so sorry.
So, my wife picked up my daughter from school on Friday, I think, or Thursday. and asked her something like, hey, have you heard of Popeye's something? And my wife was like, yeah, Popeye's chicken. And my daughter said, yeah. There's a girl in her class whose dad works at one. And so our daughter was really excited about, hey, we should go have that this weekend. And so my wife and I were both thinking, yes, absolutely. Any excuse to go get Popeyes, that's great. And so we did on Sunday. We got it for lunch. And our little one sat there and ate. There's like a surf and turf combo.
Hmm.
And our little seven-year-old sat and ate like two of the full tenders and then four or five butterfly shrimp and just thought it was the best thing.
Nice.
And of course, our chicken was great too, because I feel like I think they have maybe the best bone-in fried chicken that you can get from the fast food joints. I'm pretty partial to KFC, but I mean, Popeye's is up there. I think theirs is the best. And of course, they have the red beans and rice, which just kind of doesn't make it fair.
Phenomenal side.
Yeah. Doesn't make it fair for anybody else. And they really hooked me up. It was nice for one of the meals we got. I asked for red beans and rice as a side. Of course, well, for every meal we got, I asked for red beans and rice as a side. Whether our daughter eats it or not, we will.
It's like, I'll eat that.
Yeah. And for one of them, that you have the little personal one.
Mm-hmm.
But for one of the meals, they hooked us up with like the little, I don't know what it is, but the size bigger than that. And I don't think they charged us for it. So thank you. Thank you, Popeyes.
Cool.
For helping us out. But anyway, we just hadn't been in forever. And kind of to continue that theme from last week where I went to a Mexican restaurant I hadn't been in forever. Went to Popeyes for the first time in forever. Loved it. Our little one got to tell her friend that she, I don't know if it's the same restaurant her dad works at or not, but we at least were patrons of the same restaurant and everyone enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll be going back.
Hey, speaking of callback from that, that conversation we had about restaurants you haven't gone to, we talked about Cancun last week. My brother will text me thoughts as he's listening to the show, like days later. And he was texting me, he's like, dude, didn't we go to Cancun for your wedding? And I was like, hold on. No, we didn't go to Cancun. And then I was thinking, oh, he's talking about the restaurant, not Cancun. I was like, bro, we were so broke. No, we didn't go to Mexico. We didn't go to Cancun. We definitely didn't take anybody with us. No, he's talking about the restaurant. I said, no. He's like, oh, I guess we went without you. I was like,
what?
Oh, well, what they did is because our wedding was relatively short and we had it mid to late afternoon and didn't serve dinner. Cause again, we were broke.
Yeah.
And we're like, we will serve food, but not a meal. So they went out the whole family went out. Or my family went out to Cancun. So I was not upset or feel like I missed out. Although we did partake in Mexican food that night for dinner too. Because the plates of food that we had set aside did not end up making it to us.
Nope. That's how that always works.
We hit Taco Bell on the way
there
to
our
hotel. And of course, like everybody that worked there had to come to the window like, oh my gosh, y'all are coming from your wedding. I was like, yes, yes, we're coming from our wedding.
Yes.
No, we didn't get to eat. We're just picking something up quick. Like, I want to go change. I want to hit the hot tub. I want to relax.
We
get a free dessert out of it. We got to order their cinnamon twists or whatever they call it.
Oh, good. Like, stuff that gets all over your tux.
Well, I didn't eat it in the car. I was like, thanks for the generosity, Taco Bell, to give us $1.29 dessert for free on our wedding day.
Just sitting back there, they're about to throw away.
Probably.
Well, ours, really quickly. So my mother-in-law packed us like a care package because we didn't get to eat at our wedding either. I mean, it's just kind of how it works.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to, and we had what you call heavy hors d'oeuvres.
Sure.
So, and we had United cater it.
Nice.
So United catered it. They did a great job. They made my cake. I think they made my wife's cake too. Anyway, so we had that at the hotel room, which was great. The next day, after eating heavy hors d'oeuvres from United for our wedding, including leftover ones, first thing as a married couple was we went to United for lunch.
Nice.
That was our first dining experience as a married couple, was going to 50th in Indiana and hitting up the old grocery store for some lunch.
Yeah. Well, the Taco Bella. Wow. That mixed Taco Bell and Taco Villa. Taco Bell we hit was on 50th on the way out to our hotel. Cause we stayed here in town Saturday night. We didn't leave on our honeymoon till Monday morning. And then we spent a week down there on the Texas coast.
Pretty much exactly what we did. Yeah. Well, wedding Sunday, then we flew out Monday.
Yeah. Wedding Saturday drove.
No, Saturday. Monday. I don't know what the heck I'm saying. Yeah. Our wedding was Saturday.
We stopped in San Antonio, and I tell this story and it makes Samantha cringe so hard every time. So we're eating dinner on the Riverwalk at this Mexican restaurant. I think it was Republic of Texas. Love the food. Love the environment. This little mariachi band comes up to us, says, "Hey, can we play you guys a song?" He's like, "Yeah, we're on the first stop of our honeymoon." Like, "Oh, it's awesome. We're going to play this love song for you." And they play for us. We're like, "Oh, this is so cool." And then the song's over. The main guy kind of sticks around like to get his tip. And I was like, "Yeah, I don't have cash." I was like, "I essentially like requested you guys to stay here and play for us. And now I can't even tip you." I was like,
"Oh, Spencer, you got to go."
I was like, "Oh my gosh.
You
got to
go find him."
Yeah. I was like, "I'll find you after we pay. And so maybe I can get them to give me cash back." Oh, it was so bad. And of course they wouldn't cash me out on a card. So I was like,
I'll hit you up next time, guys.
Yeah. And we had packed up some leftover food. And of course the Riverwalk is loaded with people asking for food. So I was like, I don't know why I brought food. I'm not going to eat leftovers. We're leaving San Antonio tomorrow right. And going down to the beach. So yes, here, take this.
Well, you kind of made it right in the end, in as far as the universe is concerned.
Yeah, I gave it to somebody else, but I did not give it to the mariachi band that I essentially requested a song and they performed for us.
Yeah.
Samantha won. It was so embarrassing for her to be the center of attention. Because obviously it wasn't like a big restaurant. But if the mariachi band is playing specifically for a table, you kind of like, "Well, what's going on over there?" Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
Like all eyes were on us and I was enjoying it. I was like, "Yeah, they're playing for us," and just loving the moment. Samantha's like flushed, so embarrassed. And then of course, in our own personal embarrassment, we couldn't even tip them. It was like, I don't have cash.
I think I would have just melted. I would just melted into the chair.
Yeah.
Cause I would have reacted the same way. I don't want my birthday done at restaurants. I love mariachi music. I love listening to them. I love it when they play at someone else's table. But I think I would fall apart if they played at my table.
Yeah.
Even though I'm sure I would enjoy the song, but I would just be focused too much on dumb stuff in my head that isn't worth focusing on.
Yeah. All right. That'll do it for us this week on the 23 Personal Podcast. Before I hit the outro, I do want to say next week may be adjusted schedule-wise. Samantha is taking her big licensing exam on Wednesday. So those that can send good thoughts, vibes, prayers, whatever you have, send them her way. She is full on test prep mode. She's gonna crush it, but
absolutely she is.
Every little bit helps. This will get her started. She's going to be a licensed professional counselor setting up a mental health counseling practice. So this is the first big step. So keep her in your thoughts for us as we get ready to go. But that'll do it. For Michael, I'm Spencer. We'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to the 23 Personnel Podcast. Help us out by subscribing, rating the show, and leaving a review. Follow us on Twitter at 23 Personnel, Spencer at Punt Suck, and Michael at Michael_LBK. Be sure to catch the next episode. And until then, guns up and let the tortillas fly.